To help me talk through what we've seen from Julio Rodriguez early in this season and what we've seen from the Mariners in general, it's Seattle Times, Ryan Divish. Ryan, how you doing?
Pretty good. I like this. I like that backdrop. It's sick.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you. It's a labor of love, call it that. I needed something half decent. Before this, I just literally had just like a drywall put up. I was like, I can't do this, man. The screws sticking out and everything. It looked brutal. So fix it up and have some space, that is for sure. But hey, listen, look, the pitching has been great. We've talked about that a ton. I want to talk to you just from an offensive standpoint. Scott Service, even after wins, he's in the post game, he's still saying, hey, look, the offense hasn't quite clicked yet. And he's still, leaning towards that. And again, it's something that, it's going to be, the ups and downs, ebbs and flows offensively. It's always been that way. What are you seeing? Like, and how would you grade out the month of April offensively for this team?
Well, I mean, it's definitely not passing. The month of April has been pretty sparse. I just think that you see bits and pieces. You'll see a game, the game in Houston where they beat Framber Valdez. They took a bunch of walks. I think there was a game in Colorado where I think they struck out only three times. You see bits and pieces kind of what this roster could be. But for the most part, you're just seeing way too much swing and miss.
Yeah.
An offense that's totally reliant on the home run. And frankly, not enough walks. If you're gonna rely that much on the home run, then you need to walk more. But I just see an offense it's really, I think, trying to force results, and complement a pitching staff that's been so good. And I think, people sometimes forget, like, these guys are human and they don't like to fail and they don't like to struggle. And sometimes they take it upon themselves. Well, I'll get the big hit. I'll do that. And it's kind of not the mentality that manager Scott Service or any manager preaches. You hear it in different ways, like keep the line moving, pass the baton. I can't remember, the Dodgers have some saying, but really it's just about understanding that a quality at bat and doing the little things in that at bat matter more than being the hero. And I'm not accusing every Mariners player of being the hero, specifically Julio, but there are moments where you can see they get out of what they do best because they're trying to do more in a moment that it is maybe necessary. So it has not been good at all. It's team-wide. Like, I have never seen a team really struggle kind of all together collectively like this. And what's really strange is I looked at this lineup, and while it wasn't like loaded with power or, guys with 1,000 OPS, I looked at this lineup coming into the season and I thought it was probably going to be more consistent and better than the 2023 lineup or even the 2022 lineup, because you had established guys at almost every position with some measure of success at the big league level. Now they weren't all coming off hot seasons, but every player that they pretty much rolled out there has had some level of success at the big league level. You're not trying some prospect out, or you're not taking a guy that maybe was a utility player and saying, seeing if he can be an everyday guy. It was, even the platoon at third base with Josh Rojas and Luis Urias, like, they've had seasons where they've been, solid to average to solid big league players. So I thought it was going to be better, but we have not seen it so far.
Yeah, you make a good point. I mean, even with Jared Kelnick in years past, it was like you're putting so much, not pressure, but so much in an unknown of someone who you never know what they're going to produce at the major league level. But you mentioned some of these new guys where the biggest question mark was, can they stay healthy? But Polanco and Mitch Garver, man, like, still just trying to get just trying to get something going. I think too, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're around the players way more than I am. I mean, you're around them daily and you get a chance to have that good relationship with them. Do you feel like, the swing and miss part of it too, right? They're 30th when it comes to strikeout per at bat. And do you feel like after 2023, that was the biggest thing they wanted to address, was the strikeout numbers and fill some of those gaps? Do you feel like even the new guys coming into 2024, they kind of feel that burden of last year and that pressure where they're thinking, okay, now we can't strike out all of a sudden, and it plays into their at-bats?
I think maybe somewhat. I mean, like, you discuss not striking out so much that it's in your mind, that it's like kind of a negative connotation almost in your mind. Like, if you go up there with the idea, I don't want to strike out here, you're probably going to strike out more. You're not going to have a very good at bat. And I do think like the discussion about it, and it's just there. It's there from Scott Service. It's there from in the hitting meetings. You know, they see the numbers, and I do think that sometimes strikeouts snowball on you. You start swinging and missing. You're trying to do more, or you're trying to really force quality contact, and I think that can snowball on itself. I think that's been a problem. You know, you look at the numbers, and Polanco has never struck out at this high of a percentage, and Mitch Garver doesn't. But these are new guys too, and they have stuff to prove. And Mitch Garver got a new contract. He wants to contribute. Polanco has been traded. He wants to show people that he can still play, and he still has, you know, years left to play. And I think sometimes the results kind of get you in that moment. Like Adam Frazier a couple of years ago talked about it. The Mariners acquired him in his walk year. And in his mind, he's like, I got to put up numbers. I want this multi-year deal. This is the first time you reach free agency. You want real money. You want to sign something big. He was coming off a 300-year. He came here. He struggled. And really, when he started to play better was when he just kind of focused on, you know what, my numbers are going to be my numbers this season. Mm-hmm. I can't fix them. The start was too slow. So just embrace being on a team that's winning and have fun with that. And I think that helped him to put up better numbers towards the end. I think Teoscar Hernandez got caught up in the contract situation and looming qualifying offer and everything else. And you want to put up numbers. And when you start off slow, it's hard to get it back. I mean, like you're a pitcher. If your first start, you give up 7 runs in 4 innings and your ERA is in the 6s or 7s, it's hard to get it down. And it's there. And I mean, I could think that's the one thing people don't realize is these guys wear failure harder than the fans do. They feel worse about their failures than a fan does. They're more upset because, like, you don't get to the big league level without being the ultimate competitor. Like, these guys were all the best players on their teams growing up. They don't experience failure. They have to push themselves and they have to grind and work. And the overall pride of your numbers, like, nobody wants to be embarrassed on the field. Like, right, you know what I mean? Like, that's the worst thing. Like, you give up a bunch of bombs, you go out and you couldn't throw a strike or whatever. Like, that's the worst feeling. You don't want to be embarrassed on the field, especially amongst your peers who you're competing against. And I think the Mariners are wearing it hard to the point where I think you're seeing it kind of affect their overall approach of not relaxing. They know that the pitching's carrying them. They know that they've lost some games where the pitching has been really good. And it's frustrating. I think it's leading to negative impact more than anything.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Mitch Garver, he wins a World Series last year with the Texas Rangers. He's now, you know, considered a veteran player, and he comes over here. I mean, AJ Pierzynski, we talked to him. I know you spend a lot of time talking to those guys on Foul Territory. I listen to you guys. But we spoke to him on the radio side, and I said, hey, look, you know, Mitch Garver, talk to us about when you join a new team and trying to, A, live up to a contract, or B, be that guy who's like that team leader all of a sudden. He goes, dude, it is the worst. And you watch Mitch Garver, and he mentioned something too the other day. It was around the time he got the ring, that's right, with the Rangers. He said, yep, now I'm closing this chapter. That's a good, you know, closing of the chapter. Now I'm moving on, because I feel like he's probably asked so much about, oh, hey, you know, what World Series experience can you bring to the Seattle Mariners or whatever it may be. And so he's carrying that pressure for sure. But I want to move on with Julio Rodriguez. Right now, I looked at his month of April, and it's when you look at the month from April 1st all the way through, you know, the biggest thing that stands out is the slugging numbers, .317 slug. What are you seeing from Julio Rodriguez?
Yeah, it's been really kind of mystifying on some level. I think he probably had more hits than he did a year ago at this time, but the power's way down. A lot of ground balls to shortstop, third base side, a lot of swing and miss. And really, you know, that's the problem. They need him to hit homers. They need him to drive the ball. This offense is really centered around him doing well. You know, he's one of their best base runners. He's not getting on base. He made some swing changes kind of to his setup and then the load. You know, last year he had a problem kind of sinking into his legs, squatting down almost. And that changed the eye level on his pitches and made it difficult for him to recognize pitches. They tried to quiet that down last year. It was even more pronounced this year, where it doesn't look like he really kind of loads back to get forward. And if you see it, and I know, like, I was talking with some guys the other day, when we sit up above in the press box, even when he goes to take a pitch, he seems off balance. You know, he kind of falls forward, like he swings and misses. He's lunging forward off the plate. It's not a good balance point when he goes to hit the baseball. He's just not hitting a very good hitting position, and that's why you're seeing him foul off fastballs that he can hit. And also, you know, when you're not in a good balance point, you're not able to recognize or lay off of breaking balls out of the zone. I wrote something on it a while ago, but scouts and, you know, opposing teams, and this is not a new philosophy, but basically the book to get Julio out is bust him in on his hands with fastballs because he can't pull them, and he can't, you know, at 98 above the zone, you're not going to be able to keep your hands in and drive it the other way. So get ahead, bust him in, and then go soft away. That's the plan against 1,000 right-handed power hitters. And some people adjust and they stay in and they become great, and others don't, and they, you know, struggle. And I think that's where they're at with Julio. Is there's a book out on how to get him out, and he hasn't been able to offset it. Like, I think he has a pretty good idea of what they're trying to do to him. But at the same time, it's like the devil on your shoulder and the angel on your shoulder is like, no, you can do this, you can hit this, you can do this.
For sure.
And then the other guy's saying, no, you know, be patient, wait for your pitch. Because, like, I talked to several pro scouts about it. They know how to attack him, and he hasn't been stubborn enough at times to just say, okay, this is it, I'll take the walk, or I won't, you know, kind of go out of the zone or force power swing or anything like that. They know it. They know that he kind of gets himself out at times. And I think another problem is because of that, like, they know what they want to do, and they don't want to let him beat them. You know, he's still the most dangerous hitter in that lineup.
Yeah.
And they're not going to give in a situation, oh, yeah, it's 2-0. Oh, yeah, let's just gut a fastball and see how far he can hit it. No.
Yeah.
We'll still make a pitcher's pitch because there's this chance that even on a 2-0 pitch that may be off the zone, he's looking to hit something. So if we can execute a slider here on 2-0, maybe he swings, rolls over. I think a big problem for Julio has been just, like, they make a big deal about pulling the ball in the air, and good things happen. And it does. When he pulls the ball in the air, it's great. But I think for him, when his focus is on hitting the ball to right center, hard and in the air, which is a special gift that a lot of guys can't do, then the other stuff happens. Like, homers to the pull side will happen if he's clean to the middle of the field and to right center, and you're in a better spot to hit breaking stuff as well. But again, hitters are stubborn and they have to figure it out on their own. And I mean, it's not like he's not working. I think there's some mechanical flaws, and I think there's some approach flaws, and you add all that in together, that's where you get, where it's not a lot of power, it's a lot of swing and miss, and a lot of frustration from him, the Mariners, and their fans.
Yeah, you mentioned, I mean, and the difference is, I'm glad you brought up, you know, pitching inside with him. There was an at-bat, you know, Dane Dunning, the home run he hit, that was a pitch mistake. That was right around 90 miles an hour, mistake, middle in, crushed. And then you got Hunter Brown, who's struggling command-wise. He laid off a pitch up in the strike zone, but then he threw this pitch well inside, swung right through it early in the game. It's like, oh man, that's where that spot is, where his eyes light up, and he just you know, trying to just lay off that pitch the best he can.
I was thinking that same thing, because in that situation, I think it was the bases were loaded. Brown was struggling. He's on the ropes there. You know,
yes.
Just, you know, don't give in to the desires to hit the homer when it's not there. And it had a little bit of run on the inside, but again, like, it wasn't a hittable pitch out of the hand. Like, it wasn't a good pitch to hit out of the hand for Julio. You know, you've got to get the fastball up and away, and teams aren't going to throw it there. You're looking for mistakes, but like I said, they're going to be very careful, especially with runners on, what they do with him and how they're going to pitch him. And they're certainly not, you know, he's only going to get the mistakes. They're not going to challenge him. I just don't think that it's smart. The scouts I've talked to is like, yeah, we don't care that what he's hitting. We're not giving him fastballs in his zone. Our misses are going to be off the plate to him, because right now he's shown the propensity to swing at pitches off the plate.
All right, one last thing for me. I know we're looking way into the future, only in the beginning of May here, but if you could, you know, hypothetically look into crystal ball, the Mariners, let's say they're a game or two out of first place, or the game or two up at first place, the ideal trade deadline scenario, you're thinking, if you had, okay, you're probably thinking, I know a couple of years ago they went Luis Castillo and everyone was thinking offense. What would be that ideal target for a trade deadline piece if it's one player, and what kind of hit are we talking?
Yeah, that's...
Or even if it is offense, it could be something different. And let's say everyone's healthy, by the way.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, we, you know, you would have said Luis Arraez. I mean, like, a high contact guy that can play multiple positions, that gets on base and really kind of changes the dynamic of a lineup. You know, you're batting him at two or so, or even around Julio, so you'd have a guy on base. You know, he's not great defensively, but I was really surprised the Padres were able to jump the market and that Arraez was that available this early in the season. Yeah, obviously, I think everybody thinks a hitter of some sort, whether it's a guy, it's a right-handed bat maybe that can play left field, you know, a corner guy, maybe it's a first baseman. Maybe at some point you look at it and say, this isn't working with Ty France, we need to do something more. It changes because, like, their roster is different by having a full-time DH. Like, when you have a full-time DH, it changes. And so that's where they're kind of in a weird spot. But I think they'll go out and try and find a hitter. And honestly, I think if there's a good leverage reliever that is available right-handed,
we haven't talked about that yet.
I would definitely look at that, because look, until Gregory Santos steps on a mound, he's an idea, not a player. Yeah. And I think I like what Trent Thornton's done. I think he's been pretty good. I think people don't, you know, they see the inherited runners and stuff like that, but I think he's been pretty good. But like, if you can find somebody with a little bit more strikeout potential to take that role that's going to be missing with Matt Brash, then you do that. And I think that bolsters it a little bit more. I think they're missing that a little bit. They're missing Brash right now. You know, Stanek's been pretty good, but having one more right-handed piece to go with Stanek and Munoz, especially, if, like I said, if we don't know what Santos is. And even if you do get Santos, then get better. Like, maybe you can't find the bat you want, but then make sure you lock down 6, 7, 8, and 9 and find that guy. I think they have guys, and it's crazy. I was looking the other day. Ty Buttrey hit 99 and almost 100 miles an hour in Tacoma. Jordan Holloway hit 99. They have arms everywhere. It's like, I mean, like, it's not your world anymore. That 90 from the left side, 94 from the left side.
Hey, dude, I was pumping 98. What are you talking about?
Oh yeah, you and O'Flaherty always talking about 98 all the time. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Dude, I wish, man. I actually just. Talking to Bryce Miller, he said once he got within the system and, you know, the analytics and profiling his pitches, I'm like, yeah, if I had all that back in the day, I'd still be pitching. I'd be a teammate right now. I love that. Dude, by the way, guys my generation are like, oh, if I had that information, I'd still be. I'm like, no, it's not that simple. Let's go. Come on.
You know, it still takes talent. I mean, one of my favorite stories is we were in Texas and Brad Miller came over to say hi to some of us. You know, covered him since he was drafted. And he's watching Perry Hill work with some of the infielders, and he's watching him teach. And he's like, damn, if I would just had Perry Hill, I still might be a shortstop, you know? And I mean, it's true. It's changed. The thinking's changed. Yeah. Guys can get better faster. But, you know, and I think that's why it's so hard. I mean, like, everybody throws. You cannot be a right-handed pitcher and really throw less than 95 miles an hour and be in the bullpen. You can get away with it as a starter, but you better have some really good stuff. You better be Kyle Bradish. Ripping 90, you know, ripping high spin sliders or somebody like that. It's just the way modern baseball is, and that's why it's so hard to hit right now.
And by the way, back in the day, to your point, you can't be a right-handed pitcher, not throw gas in the bullpen. Back in the day, it was like you come up as a starting pitcher, and that's kind of your thing. And if that doesn't work out, hey, we'll try and transition you to be a bullpen arm. But it's like now you look at it and go, hold on, everyone now throw, like, everyone's hitting triple digits nearly, or 97, or they have some ridiculous spin and breaking ball, you know, out in the back pocket. It's wild, man. It is a different game for sure. But we even touch really on the bullpen at all. But Ryan, listen, I appreciate it. Hopefully you can come back on at some point. Hopefully this offense can start, you know, cutting down on the swings and misses, better at bats, and complement that pitching. But you can catch Ryan Divish at Ryan Divish. If you're not following Ryan, you're a Mariners fan, you are not a Mariners fan, that is for sure. Because best follow on social media to keep up with what this team is doing. By the way, I do like your what do you call them now? Quote tweets or posts, whatever. Someone writes something, and you follow, you double down on it. I love it. It's hilarious.
Well, sometimes you know, I think people think that that I'm trying to be mean. A lot of times it's sarcasm or I find it funny. Right. Look, people,
yeah.
The one great thing about baseball is you can have an opinion, and we've all played Little League. We have all had coaches, and baseball has so many varying opinions about what is to be successful and what isn't. And that's what makes it great. You can really, you know, everybody can talk baseball. I can't, you know, you can't talk about a football play, you know, as an offensive coordinator or even like basketball player or whatever, but you can, everybody can talk baseball and I like it, but you know, you gotta have fun with it. I hope people don't always take me so seriously. I am just having fun sometimes, maybe in a row.
No, it's good stuff. I think it's hilarious, but Ryan, really appreciate it. And thanks for joining me. Hopefully you can come back and join me in the EQC studios another time.
All right. Thanks, man.